welcome once again to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. I'm Mark Warner, as always, joined by my co-host Chris Letha out on Long Island. We've got a real good show today. Russ Cohen, founder of Sportsology, is going to come in and help us look at the Matt Duchene deal that went down this week. Brian Yates is going to join us later in the show to look at the Red Wings, where they're at, where they're headed, and so on down the line with Red Wings Nation. So we've got a great show for everybody. Stay tuned.
Hello, hockey fans, and welcome once again to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. I'm Mark Warner, along with Chris Letha. We are now going to be affiliated with the inaugural launch of the Hockey Writers podcast page over at thehockeywriters.com. We're talking with J.D. Stiles from Cali Sports News, reporting live from the Stanley Cup Finals. And today we're being joined by the first general manager in Las Vegas franchise history, George McPhee.
With Pat Quinn, you know, I'm likely the finest man I've ever met in my life.
This is the Vegas Hockey Podcast. We're talking with Quinn Mlarchuk.
There's something about George McPhee that everybody says is a good kick.
This is the Vegas Hockey Podcast, and we're talking with Dana Lane, play-by-play voice of the MLB Rebel Hockey Team and owner of Dana Lane Sports. Joining us now is Matt Pryor of thehockeywriters.com. He's coming to us from the Dallas Stars training camp.
All right, hockey fans, welcome to another episode of the Vegas Hockey Podcast. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Vegas Hockey Pod. Go over to Russ Cohen's Sportsology SoundCloud page. You can find us there. You can find us at Grandstand Sports Network, thehockeywriters.com. We're pretty much all over the map. We're going to welcome in Russ Cohen to the show today to break down the Matt Duchene trade with us after about a year of this. Sakic finally did pull the trigger on this deal. Russ, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking the time to join us this
Saturday
morning. Anytime. Always appreciate having you on, sir. So what did you think, first of all, just out of the gate when you heard this deal was finally done? What was your first impression?
My first impression was, you know, let me see what they got, because they just come off of playing Philly, and I was a little let's just say my radar was up because Joe Sakic was on the trip, so I had a feeling something might be happening. And, you know, Duchene had a good game that night. He had a goal. And so, you know, my thinking was something could happen, and it did the next day. And so after that, I looked at what the haul was, and I said, you know, most if not every team in this deal did very well. Like, this was one of those trades where it could really work out well for everybody. Now, there are a few caveats, but so far, I think everybody did okay on the surface.
Well, let me bring in Chris to look at it from the Colorado angle, and then we'll get into it from the Senators and Nashville perspective a little bit later on.
Hey, Russ, glad you've been able to jump on board for a little bit. So the pro to this deal for Colorado is going to say, wow, Joe Sakic got six really good assets for Matt Duchene, who's a free a UFA after next season. The person who's going to be more con might say, well, yes, but he didn't get an elite prospect back. He didn't get a Thomas Chabot. You know, he didn't get a Dante Favreau. He didn't, even though we got three draft picks, they're going to be towards the end of each of those rounds. Valuable, but not elite. So where do you come on that? And then the second part is, you can just give us a little background on the three players, you know, Girard, who played yesterday in Sweden for Colorado, Bowers, Kamenev as well, a little scouting there. And just so everyone out there knows, when I first heard the trade, I said, okay, what is Colorado getting? And the first name I heard was on the air with Brian Yates, who's coming on later. And he said, oh, Colorado got Sam Girard. And I thought of Russ immediately because about a month before the 2016 draft, he was on this very show. And I said to him, Russ, give me a sleeper, a guy we should be paying attention to that you like a lot. And he said Sam Girard, who went the middle of the second round of that draft. So big. You know, how do you see those two things for Colorado?
I think Colorado did well. I mean, I think Sam Girard is close to elite. I mean, we're talking about playing in the NHL at his age. He's got already like 4 points in six games, something to that degree. He on some teams can play the top power play, and other ones he'll play the second. Right now he's playing the second, which is fine. He'll probably be a three for most teams, and for that one he will because they have Tyson Barrie. But again, that's terrific. I mean, that's something they've added now, an element that they didn't really have with Matt Duchene, and that is now they've got two solid power plays, and they've already cashed in on that in the game in Sweden. So I thought that was good. And Shane Bowers is a really good prospect. I'm sold on him making it to the NHL, and I think he could be a really good second-line center, plays a complete game, but probably can be a 55-point guy. And so I like what Sackett got. Now, Hamonev, you know, he had 21 goals last year. He showed high-end skill in international play and as he moved up the ladder, but, you know, it's not as high-end as I thought it might be in the AHL. So, like, as far as his development goes, you know, he's a big, strong guy. He's got an edge to his game, so he'll be in the penalty box. He will score goals. I don't know if it'll be a massive factor for them. But again, I think they did really well in this trade. And I mean, you hope if even just one out of those three picks hit really well, then they did really well. Because again, Matt Duchene wouldn't have been there by the end of next year, right, no matter what.
Yeah, and also he was going. Keep in mind, in terms of those three draft picks, granted, odds are, you know, Ottawa's first and third and Nashville's second. You know, they're not going to have, you know, a top 10 pick or probably a top 15
right.
pick. But Bowers was picked, I think it was 28th overall. And like you said,
yeah.
he may not become an elite player, but he's going to, you know, if you get a top six forward, especially a second line center. Now, they might have to wait on him a little bit, right? Is he at the...
Yeah, two, 3 years for sure.
Yeah. Okay, which is okay because they have a lot of young
yeah.
forwards. So no, I hear you on that. And but last question for me: what about the aspect of, you know, Girard being a little undersized? Their
Don't
big
care.
Pick from last year's draft. You're okay with that?
I don't care. You can't catch him. There's no way of catching Girard on the ice. Nobody gets a hold of him. Nobody cleans his clock because he's there and gone before you generally get there. And he knows how to get rid of the puck quickly, and he plays good defense. He actually got great catch-up speed. And so I don't worry about Sam Girard at all. I don't worry about the size. And remember, they could still be a playoff team this year because if Tyson Jost gets healthy, he looked really good in the early going. I think he's a pro already. Then you've got that second-line center spot locked up again once he's back. So I think in a lot of ways, they may not have lost any offense at all in this Duchene trade, but that has to be with the healthy Jost.
Right, interesting. All right, Mark, I'm going to leave it to you from Ottawa's and Nashville's perspective.
Well, let's start with Nashville, and you know, I was big on Sam Girard just like you were, Russ. But having the mm-hmm. defenseman that they have in Nashville kind of makes that an asset that doesn't really maybe get missed in your system for a few years. A second round pick is a second round pick. And not just recent events in Vegas. We have to see what Hamonev is going to bring. But if they were going to trade Girard, Hamonev, and a second for Kyle Turris, don't they do that deal, 100% of the time?
Yeah. Because they have that depth
sure.
on defense. And so that's definitely. Now, the biggest thing is they got cost certainty with Turris because they got him locked up. And he's not locked up to huge, you know, top-line center money. He's hooked into that, well, I'm sort of like a 1A kind of money. Same, you know,
sure.
same as Johansson. He's making a little more. And so now they have a locked-up combination of two young centers, one and two, with good size and skill. That's something they hadn't had before. Now, that's something where if they'd have matched up against the Penguins with that a year ago, might have looked a little better.
Right. And I was thinking the same thing. With Fisher playing the number two before he got hurt, Fisher was really best suited at a third line type center. So bringing in Turris to play second line behind Johansson, pushing their depth at center just got really solid. And you're right.
Yeah.
Having Johansson and a healthy Turris, seven game series anyway, but it would have been a lot more interesting from Nashville's perspective going against Pittsburgh with that depth at center. And I like, short-term goal. I think that, Nashville came out on top is my opinion on the trade just for that reason. They're still in that, they have one of the best defense, if not the best defense combination of puck movers, stay at home two ways in the National Hockey League. And then you have that depth down the center and obviously solid in net. I think bringing Turris in might put them at the forefront of the Western Conference.
It could. They need to just, make sure Rene's sharp, which he has been at the start of the year, and that's great. Saros needs to win more games. He won his first, but he needs to really be able to win games because I still was not comfortable with him after what he did in the Stanley Cup, which wasn't good, and to start the season. But we'll see. Maybe he's on the mend. I think Nashville is one of the top teams. There's no doubt in the West.
So that does take us to the Ottawa perspective. What does, with the subtraction of Turris and the addition of Duchesne, what different dynamic does that bring to the Ottawa Senators team?
Well, we saw Duchesne play yesterday. He wasn't taking a lot of shots. There's going to be like a little bit of a fitting in process, but it gives them another goal scorer because he is a goal scorer before he's really a playmaker. So that's something where Ottawa sort of needed that, and I think that's a big thing. Now, they're going to have to get him signed. He is a Halliburton native, so he's not too far from there. So it's possible he might take a little less to sign with them because they're never going to offer him top money because they're a budget team. But if they get him signed, then from their perspective, they did great. Now, if all of a sudden it turns into Keith Yandle with the Rangers and they don't get to retain him, well, then they better win the Stanley Cup or at least get to the Stanley Cup before his time is up. Otherwise, it didn't work out that great for them.
No, you could look at the Milan Lucic deal in L.A. where they pick him up for a first-round pick, Martin Jones, and Colin Miller, and weren't able to retain him. And that kind of set the Kings back for a couple of years, losing that pick. And also now Colin Miller going from Boston to Vegas and really contributing on their power play.
That set them back. That set him back, and the Sequeira trade set him back because they gave up Roland McEwen in that deal and a pick. And Roland McEwen is playing right now in the NHL for Carolina and looking good. And, of course, the Kings could really use a guy like that now, actually.
as well as they're playing right now. But, those two deals were...
No, but they still could, long term.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you trade for somebody and you look at what they did give up with a first and a third and Bowers. And then if they can't come to terms with Duchesne, it was like a year and 7/8 rental. That's a steep price to pay if they can't. What does Duchesne look like if he does hit the open market term wise? I'm sure someone would max him term. What is he going to be a 6-7 guy or is he going
to
be?
He'll be a 6-7.
Right.
He'll be a 6-7, and he'll probably get, depending on how many goals he ends up with this year or next year, if he gets around 25-30 like he's capable of, he'll get around $6.5-7 million a year.
And I'm sure someone will offer him terms. So there's actually, it's kind of a gamble on Ottawa's part. Someone like the Rangers or somebody could come in and throw $8 million a year full term at him. It's hard to turn that down, especially with taxes being what they are and that kind of stuff. It's kind of a gamble on Ottawa's part.
It's a gamble, but again, when you're a team that, has a player like Erik Karlsson and have made some other moves where they have a pretty deep system as far as prospects go. Like you mentioned, Shabbat, and there's, you know, there's no shortage. Colin Wilson, who's out right now with that wrist injury, but he was looking real good at the NHL level. They have a really good system there. So they have guys. So Bowers is just another guy, and he's a good one. But they have a deep system, so they could make that, they could take that risk, but you still sort of want to make sure there's that payoff. So, you know, we'll see. But right now, this year, they're going to be a good team. I mean, if Anderson stays solid, they're a solid team. They're they'll be one of those teams that'll be on the playoff level all year.
That's remember, and I was guilty of it last year with just waiting for the curtain to fall, and they were one game from the Stanley Cup final in the East. So, their system was alike. And I'll reference the Kings again. When the Kings were winning their cups, they were the eighth seed and they got in on the last day. Then they went in again, got in 2 days from the end and won the cup in 12 and 14. And Ottawa has that, not the same style, but a style that's more suited to playoff hockey than it really is towards the regular season. So look for them again to have a deep run into the, and I picked them second in their division again this year. And I
don't think they're a lock yet, though. I think this helps them get closer to being a playoff lock. They're more of a playoff lock than when I picked them not to make the playoffs at the start of the year, because they, even though they lost Turris, they gained some goal scoring, and I was more worried about the goal scoring.
Right. Well, let me bring Chris in. I think he's got a couple more questions to go before we got to let you
go. Okay, I can go a couple more. Yep.
Yeah, I got one last one for Russ, and you kind of hinted on it, Russ, is yes, no doubt Ottawa gave up a lot in this deal. I mean, Bauer is a strong prospect, two really good picks, as well as Turris, but, you know, I don't know where you see these rankings, but, you know, the Hockey News has Brown, White, and Shabbat in the top 15 prospects of all of hockey, with Shabbat near the top. So, you know, to be able to pull off adding Duchesne and not trading one of those elite prospects, if you will, even if this winds up being a two-year scenario to try to win the Cup, you know, you could understand that philosophy, the gamble that they did take. And let's face it, any team that was going to acquire Duchesne, and this was part of the problem why it took so long, is they are going a little bit on a ledge, because there are no guarantees that, you know, Duchesne will stay beyond when his contract ends.
Right, and they weren't going to give Turris 6 years, because they're, like I said, they're a budget team, so they probably offered him 4, maybe 5 max, and he was looking for that longer deal. So when you're a team like that, you have to sort of gamble a little bit, but they're gambling on their prospects, and Pierre Dorion's got a very smart crew there, and they do draft well, and I do think, you know, Logan Brown, Colin Wilson, and Thomas Chabot could be within the top 15. I'm not going to say definitely, because I'd have to really look at that, but they're definitely three of the best prospects out there. I mean, White's already made it to the NHL. Brown's really close, and Shabbat really could make it if they want him to, but they really want him to continue to play top line minutes. We might see him towards the end of the season. If not, you'll see him next year. Top pairing minutes.
I mean. Well, all right, Russ. Thanks for joining us again to go through that. Looks like
thanks,
there's
Russ.
Upside and some possible thanks, downside to everybody. Let everybody know where they can find your stuff, man.
Sure. www.sportsology.com. You can look me up on Amazon.com at Russ Cohen. I've got great books for the holidays, or SoundCloud page, which you guys have advertised, which is great. And at Sportsology on Twitter. They finally gave me 280 characters, so I'll leave them alone for a while.
All right. Thank you so much, sir. We'll be talking to you down the road.
All right, guys. See
you. Thanks, Russ.
Well, all right. We had Russ in. Absolutely. Joined us on short notice to go through that. And he's one of our go-to guys when we talk about prospects and kids coming up and where they slot in. So it's the perspective on the prospects that went to Colorado in the deal. I don't think anyone's better than Russ to come in and break that down for us.
Yeah, Russ and Zach Devine are tremendous. I mean, they both have different viewpoints and whatnot, but that's great, you know.
Well, sure, no, that's good.
Yeah, so Why don't we jump into the Vegas lane here before we have Brian on? A big win last night. I have to tell you, sir, from afar, wasn't an easy road trip. Had, you know, the goalie situation. And, you know, Winnipeg has been playing really well. I mean, I think
on fire.
I want to say they lost their first couple of games, and since then they've, like you said, been on fire. So that was a big win last night. They come home after that 6-game road trip, and then they hit the road again. You know, they're off until Tuesday, and next week they go to Edmonton and Vancouver. So and then come back to a stretch that's kind of more normal home and road split. So, you know, the road trip wasn't great, but they got through it. They survived it, and what makes it kind of in their rearview mirror was another really good game, home win last night. And I tell you about this team, it seems like it's a different guy. One night Lindbergh gets a goal or two. Last night it was Carlson. You know, Neil always seems to be in the fray. The goal scoring seems to be, a good mix from that team.
Absolutely, it is. The offense is spread up and down all four lines. Even when you go down to the fourth line, Belmar had a beauty goal the other night. Nosek is solid in the faceoff circle. Down their fourth line even is just. I'm trying to pull up some of my notes right now on where they are as far as offense goals for. They're right there
balanced.
At the top of the league. They're right top of the league with goals for.
And they're getting contributions from everybody.
And the other thing, you know, the road trip being what it was, they're still 3-4-1 on the road, which puts them about 46-47% of their road points, and move to, I want to say, 8-1 at home now, 7-1 at home. So if you're gonna, and that's obviously, I don't think they're gonna hit 95% of points for in their home games. But if you look at road points for, if you can get 50% of your road points, there's a bunch of teams in the National Hockey League that would sign up for that. If you get 75% of your home points and 50% of your road points, you're solid, right? I mean, that's
absolutely,
you know, even
well, that's what they say. Play 500 on the road and play 500 on the road and have a strong home record and you'll be fine.
And that's the recipe that they're going with right now. So, and even me, and I put them at 70 points for the season, and they're at 21 now. So it looks like that's a ticket that's going to cash for me. But I keep thinking that there's that nagging feeling that the expansion Blues are going to, you know, come around for this team. But
well, you know,
when you watch it,
you know, injuries, they've had a lot of injuries, obviously, to the goaltenders.
Absolutely.
And their
forwards, too. Marchessault missed a couple
guys,
games. Paula missed a couple games.
Yeah. But
those are important players.
Nothing drastic. They didn't lose Neil for a month or something along those lines. And on the goaltenders, from what I've seen, it looks like all three guys, Fleury, Subban, and Danskar, are on the mend. But there is no timetable. And, you know, considering basically over the next 10 days or so, I think they have like two games, because they don't play until next week. The next game is until Tuesday, then they play Thursday, and then they don't play to the following Sunday. So basically over the next roughly 10 days, they have two games. I think you'll see Legace in those two games, and then we'll see where those goalies are at. So I wouldn't expect at that point. So if they can split those two games, Edmonton and Vancouver. Vancouver's been a nice surprise as well. Edmonton has not been a nice surprise. They had a couple wins this week, really thanks to the 3-on-2
trending
play.
Up a little bit.
They got out. I'm not just saying this. I mean, it was a rough night for the Islanders last night. Boy, Cody Wade was not happy. But be that as it may, like, they were very fortunate when Long Island got outplayed. But That's the thing about hockey. You can play a tremendous game. And unlike the other sports, when you play a tremendous game in hockey, your goaltender can steal 2 points. It's really hard to do that. It's almost impossible for that to happen in the other sports. But, you know, then it was a back-and-forth game in New Jersey. So, but they need to get some wins going. But in terms of the Knights, you got to be thrilled. And, you know, real quick, it leads to a bigger point. If this continues, come late January, they're going to have a tough decision on their hands, George McPhee, front office, and ownership in terms of, you know, big picture. Because I'll be honest with you. I mean, I think I look at 4 guys on this team who are pending UFAs, and Neil and Marchessault and Perron and Spezza. Now, to me, Perron and Spezza would be 2 guys. You're definitely going to trade for the best package of picks and prospects you can get. And then out of Neil and Marchessault, I think they keep one of them. I think they sign one of them between now and, let's say, the deadline, and they move one. But obviously, if they did those moves, they would be kissing the playoffs, any chance of the playoffs, goodbye. So that's going to be an interesting quandary, if you will, for the team.
I don't know if you're kissing the playoffs goodbye. Like you just said, this team gets it from up and down the lineup. There's not one guy or 2 guys that this team relies on heavily.
If you're going to trade 3 of those 4, that's going to take a hit, you know, especially if you traded Neil, you know.
Yeah, I think you got to try and focus on Marchessault if you're talking about trying to set something up for the future.
He's a few years younger, and
he's a lot cheaper.
I would think he would have a little bit less of a cap hit than Neil. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And also, let me look it up. Neil is Neil 31? Tell you in 1 second. You always worry a little bit in any sport, but especially the physical sports, right? When the guy gets in his early 30s and you sign him to a bit of a long-term deal, that, okay, when is the wear and tear, and where can we expect a drop-off? So Neil just turned...
He's
30. So yeah. You know, you sign him to a 5 or even a 6-year deal, you're spying years 31 through 37. So that's a risky, you know, proposition. And he's having such a great year, you really might be able to cash in on him, come the trade deadline. That team that's, you know, one player away, there's a lot of teams in the mix this year who should feel they have a chance at the cup. You know, you can get a first round pick and a top prospect, I would think, at minimum for James Neal, as long as he continues playing like this and stays healthy.
I think I'd ask for more than that. But no, point well taken. Neil might, if they still wanted to make some moves and stockpile some more picks, I think you would do, and this, we're just speculating, but I think you go Neil and Spezza because you do have other defensemen. Shea Theodore has kind of been in and out since he's come up, so you could just, that would open up Shea Theodore's spot long term. And then you try and sign Marchessault and ride or die.
Perron and get a couple of nice draft picks, not a first, but you know, maybe a 2 and a 3 kind of thing, or a couple of 3s. I mean, depending upon what kind of year he's had. He's like a 20-goal guy, so he can help someone.
Yeah, he does a lot more. I've got to watch David Perron's game a little bit more, and he's pretty fierce on the puck on the half wall. When he's on the wall and down in the corner, it's really hard to get the puck away from that guy. He protects the puck so well and maintains so many possessions that you could see other, you know, if someone else is on the ice, it's going to get cleared. And he's the kind of guy that I'd like to see him ride or die with. If you can't move him.
You got to remember, though, too, Mark,
get...
this is considered a really strong draft. So this draft, like a second, you know, first
no, that's
or second
true.
Is worth, you know, people are going to be a little bit more reluctant than usual to let that go. So, like we just saw, Shane Bower, last year was a pretty good draft. This year is rated, at least initially, the thought process is much better. And Shane Bowers, who was a big part of that trade, probably the second piece, if you will, the second best piece Colorado got. And he was 28
behind
Sam Gerard
here.
So, but so yeah, Gerard by far was the centerpiece.
And the first. I think that first is pretty important. Even though it is later in the round, like you said, it's shaping up to be a good looking draft. That first round pick.
Well, you never know. I mean, obviously, if you're a Colorado fan, no disrespect to Ottawa, but you don't want Ottawa to make the playoffs because all of a sudden, if that, you know, in a tight race, if somehow that happened, now you're looking at a top 15 pick.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's I think the first round pick I saw was protected. If it goes within the top 10, then it's deferred until 2019 and the protection drops off.
Oh, is that right?
So,
good job by you.
So
I did not see that.
Yeah.
Well, they're not going to be in the top 10. Then I guess they would have to miss the playoffs and then win the lottery.
If they miss?
Yeah. Which, that'd be the,
you know,
like the Flyers did last year, right?
Looking at look at last year's top three. The Knights dropping down to the sixth. But, it's possible. And then they would also hold that pick. Interesting, a lot of moving parts there. And I guess we'll see. If the Knights keep playing as well as they have, and there's a lot that I see in this team that is not fluky, not puck luck, that's just sustainable as to the team identity with their speed. Their breakouts are very crisp. They've got very solid face-off play. Above middle of the pack, both on the power play and the penalty kill over their last 10 games. That's a pretty solid recipe that you know, all the effort plays that this team makes, as long as that picks up, I think what they're doing is, obviously they're not going to go 7-1 for every 8 games at home, but I think what they're doing is sustainable. Well, Brian Yates is on the line, co-host of the NHL on the Ice podcast with Chris during the week. Brian, welcome to the show, sir.
Thanks for having me on today.
Mark?
Can you guys hear me?
I hear you, Brian. Are you there, Mark? We lost Mark for a second. So, Brian, why don't you break down for us the Wings? I think they're 8, if memory serves correct, they're 8 with the loss the other night. They're 8-8-1. They got off to a bad start, good start, then had a little bit of a rough patch and kind of been playing .500 since then. So what can you tell us about the Wings so far?
Well, the main thing about the Red Wings this year is their start. Like you said, their first 17 games, 12 of them are on the road, 5 of them are at home. But their next 15 games coming up, 13 are at home and 2 are on the road. So being .500 at this mark for the Red Wings is pretty good for them, considering how bad they struggled last year. They struggled out of the start. They put nice wins together on the road. You could tell they were kind of tired in Calgary the other night. They gave up 6 goals, which is probably one of the highest goal totals of the season this year that they've given up. For them being 8-8-1, 17 games into the season is pretty impressive considering 12 of the games were on the road.
Now, Brian, me and you have talked about the Wings a lot the last couple of years. How do you see, you know, right now the Wings aren't the team they used to be. They're not a terrible team. They're a decent team. But, I mean, let's face it. I think it's fair to say that the best-case scenario for this team where they're currently at is, you know, they make the playoffs in one of those last spots and then probably lose in the first round to a really good team. And that's not really where you want to be. So, big picture, where do the Wings have to get better? And then with that, considering the young kids that they have who are all up for contracts after this year, could a lot of changes be afoot?
That's a great question. The big picture of the Red Wings, what do they need help at is absolutely they need help on defense. Look, I have not been a fan of Ken Holland over the last few years with the signings that he has signed players to. He has signed Jonathan Erickson, who's a mediocre defenseman, to a $4.25 million contract all the way through 19-20. Danny DeKeyser, another, I believe, mediocre defenseman. He signed $5 million all the way through 21-22 season. Trevor Daly for a three-year deal, you know, who's 34. All these guys are up there, you know. Jonathan Erickson's 33. Trevor Daly's 34. Cronwall, 36, still has 2 years left on his contract, which is 4.75. Mike Green in the last year of the contract. This is probably their biggest blue chip heading into the season that they have. If they are out of the playoffs, you can expect Ken Holland to try, and I really think he's going to try hard to move Mike Green somewhere. Offensive defenseman, you know, teams love offensive defensemen.
They'll do well for him, Brian. If they got a two and a three for Smith last year, I think they'll do pretty good.
And they've got 2 second rounds for next draft, 2 third rounds this draft. So look at Ken Holland to build on that. If this team's out of the playoffs, to move Mike Green. Other than that, I mean, there's nobody else. I mean, unless somebody will take one of these other players and their contracts off their hands, you look at the forward position, you know, I think they have a bunch of talent on the forward position, but then they have guys that are signed to, you know, middle of the road contracts that probably don't deserve it. Like Darren Helm signed to a 4 year, you know, four-year, $3.85 million contract. Al Decatur, he signed through 22-23 at 4.25. Franz Nielsen, he was 33, which I know you're familiar with. He signed through 21-22 season at 33 years old. I mean, you're giving guys who are at their prime long-term contracts where at the end of their long-term contract, they won't be in their primes anymore. They signed Luke Glendening, a fourth line guy that almost any AHLer could come up and probably fill that role at $1.8 million. I mean, these guys are backlogged in moving these guys up from the minors. I mean, you have guys in the minors, Shezhnikov, who was their first round pick a couple years ago, that could come up. Rasmussen, who was their first round pick last year. He's probably got about 2 years in the minors till he can come up and contribute. But they have a lot of guys in their system that can't come up because they're so backlogged in the forward position in the NHL. That have come around finally, Anthony Mantha, he's got 8 goals, leads the team in goals. Larkin, who had a sophomore slump last year, 13 assists. Leads the team in assists. Mantha has 16 points, leads the team in points. And Jimmy Howard. I mean, Jimmy Howard has been absolutely nothing short of solid. I mean, 2.48 goals against this year, 0.92 save percentage. I mean, right now, I believe Jimmy Howard has been the MVP through 17 games of the season for the Red Wings. Now,
that's where I want to go next with you is the goaltending is, big picture, you know, Jimmy Howard, I want to say off the top of my head, is 32, 33. He's signed through next season, I believe, making a good buck. And you got Mrazek, who I know there's been some stories of maybe not Ken Holland's favorite, who was exposed in expansion, not taken, but exposed in expansion, who's an RFA himself making $4 million, so he would get an increase on that. I mean, again, this team's looking towards the future. Who's going to be their number one goalie, and is that person not on the roster?
I don't think that person's on the roster right now. Unless they cut Howard loose, it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Mrazek. I mean, do they trade him? Which I can see that happening. I can see Mrazek getting traded if Howard can stay healthy for the rest of the season. Trade deadline, they try and move Mrazek. you know, they've had some issues with him about his attitude. That's why he was left in the expansion draft. He's got $4 million on this year's contract. He's an RFA with arbitration eligible next year. So, you know, they can keep his rights or they can try and move him. But they got Jimmy Howard at $5.29 million going into next year. Now, is Mrazek ready after, you know, are they ready to deal with him? Is he going to be the Red Wings' long-term solution? I don't know. I kind of feel like they want to go in a different direction because Mrazek really hasn't grabbed that torch from Jimmy Howard like they thought he would. He's got the talent. But maybe it's his, you know, it's all in his head. It's, you know, the way he carries himself, his attitude, his arrogance, perhaps, that they feel standoffish about maybe giving Mrazek the torch, the long-term torch. We'll see. But right now, they don't have anybody in their minor system that can jump up and fill that spot. They have Tom McCollum, who's been in the organization for years, a first-round pick from I can't remember when they drafted him. That's how long ago. Jared Corot. I mean, none of these guys are in line to take over the succession from Jimmy Howard when he's done. And what do they do with Jimmy Howard when his contract runs out? Are they going to re-sign him? You know, he's had injury issues throughout his career.
Yeah.
He's played great when he has been healthy, but when he's come back from an injury, he's looked mediocre at best. So, the goaltending is a huge issue that I hope Ken Holland looks at and really examines here in the offseason or during the trade deadline. Now, you talked about big picture with the Red Wings. They have a ton of RFAs heading into next year with Anthony Seau, Larkin, Mantha, Ferk, all these guys who are starting to contribute to the team this year. Ferk has been great this year. He's 24 years old. Now he's placed on waivers, claimed by Carolina, placed on waivers again and reclaimed by the Red Wings. You know, he's starting to find his own here with Red Wings. Is he a guy that is long-term with the Red Wings? I'd like to believe so. I think he's starting to show that he's ready for the NHL. Mantha, of course, is ready for the NHL. Larkin, you know, he's bounced back from his sophomore slump this year and has played really, really well. They have a lot of contracts that these guys are going to command money for heading into next season, and they have no space for them because they are right up against the cap. So some of these guys either have to be moved if they're going to sign them, or they're going to have to buy out some of these guys. And we're talking buyout like Helm, Jonathan Erickson probably needs to be bought out. So there's a few guys on this roster that will have to go before the Red Wings.
I can see Mrazek and Mastu getting moved, Brian.
And who?
And Mastu.
Oh, and you?
Yes.
Yeah, that's your favorite name to pronounce, I know.
I know. I always switch that one. My life on the line.
Chris has
to get it. That one I forget. Cormier.
We're talking with Brian Yates, co-host of the NHL on the Ice podcast here on the Vegas Hockey Podcast. I wanted to get back to the goaltending situation for a second to where, listening to you talk and describe it, it seems like there might be a parallel to be drawn with St. Louis and Brian Elliott, Jake Allen's situation that seemed to take forever to just play itself out, and where finally they just had to move Elliott out in order to hand the reins to Brian Elliott, who for the longest time to me seemed like he management at least wanted him to take the reins, and they believed that he would take the reins, but injuries, of course, had something to do with it. But is there a parallel to be drawn with those two situations where the decision is going to have to come in the front office, which one they're going to move out to really bring resolution to that situation in the net?
Yeah, there are some, but the only difference, I think, is that they had confidence in Jake Allen to eventually take over that spot. With Peter Mrazek, I don't know if they're very confident that he is the man, that he's
right,
going to take the torch from Jimmy Howard when Howard's contract is over. Mrazek is a free agent or a restricted free agent after this year, and he makes $4 million already. So are they going to dish out enough? I mean, they are so up against the cap. I mean, they have six RFAs to deal with next year. So, I mean, are you going to invest that much money into Mrazek when you still have another year and Jimmy Howard left? I mean, somebody has to be moved. Whether it's Howard is cut loose and traded or bought out, or, you know, and they go long-term with Mrazek, or they cut Mrazek loose, trade him, and they stay with Howard. But the confidence in Mrazek, I don't think, is there with the front office. I don't think they're confident that he is able to take over. Unlike St. Louis, that they knew Jake Allen was going to be the successor to Brian Elliott.
Right, right. Well, Chris, why don't you jump back in and finish up the Red Wings talk here, and then I want to get Brian's just thoughts on Vegas, since this is the Vegas Hockey Podcast, and we'll go from there.
Actually, I want to get Brian's thoughts, and it was funny. When I went down, we were doing the NHL on the Ice podcast, which we do on Sunday nights. We're on air, and the deal came down. So, Brian, why don't you tell everybody what your thoughts were from the Duchesne deal? How do you feel about it for Ottawa and Nashville, and how do you feel about it for Colorado?
Well, that was a fun night last week. Sunday, we broke the news during our show that, you know, the trade had gone down. And just when all the pieces were starting to finally fall into place and we gathered them, it was a very weird trade on Ottawa's side, because it looked like Ottawa gave up so much for so little. And the reason why I mean by that is they get the Shane, but yet, he's got one more year left on his contract. Or I'm sorry.
Yeah, one more after this.
Two more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One more after this, yeah.
And they can't negotiate with him until next year. So, I mean, they're thinking long-term here, obviously, with this trade. But, I mean, if they don't get Duchesne signed long-term, it's a complete busted deal, I believe, for Ottawa. Which I'm sure they're going to do whatever
they
can to get him long-term. But, I mean, does Duchesne want to be in Ottawa? I'm sure having a fresh start there will help him a lot. But they have to get him signed. Nashville already took care of their end. They signed Turris 6 years, $36 million. And they got their number two center that they needed, which I believe that they were probably a center short of pushing Pittsburgh to the brink of seven games, or if not winning the Stanley Cup last year. And, of course, Colorado makes out in the deal. And that was the biggest issue that we had last year, is did Nashville have enough depth when Johansson
and
went
Fisher.
Out. And Fisher, they had no centers. They had nobody to step up. So with Kyle Turris there, that fills in a huge gaping hole that they've had at center position over the last 2 years. And I thought they did a great job in the trade. They gave up Sam Girard, who I think is probably like a B-plus prospect. I mean, it's not a home run, Thomas Chabot, but it's a guy who will fill in and long-term will be there and probably build their defense around Girard for the long-term. But, I mean, Colorado made out. I mean, you know, they got picks, they got prospects, all for Duchesne, who really hasn't been a world beater in the NHL. So I just think Ottawa needs to lock him down. I think they need to surround talent with him, lock him down for Ottawa to not be a bust in this trade.
Well, my worry is, and we were talking with Russ Cohen earlier in the show about it, and obviously Ottawa's a budget team and they're not going to go to the cap. So, you come next year, if you know they open negotiations and it, you know, Duchesne, if he gets 25-30 goals, he's going to be a $6-7.5 million full term player. I don't think that's in Ottawa's budget. And do we come to the trade deadline next year and Ottawa ends up having to move Duchesne because the writing's on the wall that he's not going to re-sign with them? The trade becomes a giant bust for Ottawa, does it not?
Oh, absolutely. Unless, which they probably won't get the return that Colorado did.
For sure. I don't think there's any chance they'll get that return. It took Sakic a year to get that.
Right. And unless, you know, come next year, they start negotiations with the Sheen and get him signed probably before the season starts, you dig yourself a hole. You start looking, well, you know, if we're not going to sign this guy, we're going to have to move him. But,
yeah.
Right. Are we going to get the same haul as we did Colorado? No. I mean, they don't have a first or second round draft pick in this upcoming draft. Could they move him at the draft possibly if, you know, they can't, you know, negotiate a contract with them?
If it goes that long, they're in big trouble. If they're at the draft and there's only a week left before free agency starts, now you're looking at, what did the Kings get for Ben Bishop's negotiating rights? A fifth round pick, former two-time Vezina Trophy finalist?
But they have Duchene till through next season, so this
next
season.
Next
season.
Yeah, that's what I was.
And
saying.
And
if
that's
it goes
also
all
been
the way
in
through
my
next season.
Right.
Then you get to the draft. Now you're in big trouble.
Yeah. Well, then you get very little back. But, I've always felt that that's been a big reason why it took so long to get Duchene traded was the acquiring team, in this case Ottawa, did give up a lot of talent. And there is uncertainty. I mean, sure, I'm sure now they're going to just let everything breathe for the rest of the season. And hopefully things go really well with Duchene and Ottawa and the team. And then he wants to be here and they can work out a contract. But like I said, there is a risk involved. You're giving up strong talent here. It probably really worked for them because they kept their top three kids. And the fact that they weren't going to sign Kyle Turris, they came to that. Not thinking, and so, but at the end of the day, they did give up a lot for him. Now, I will say this, if they win a cup, and I know that's a huge if, in the next 2 years, and Duchene walks at that point, well, you know, you can live with that. That's okay. I'm not saying they're going to, I'm not saying they're the favorite after this deal to win a cup, but I'm just saying, if they were to, you know, keep in mind, they were one goal away from getting to the Stanley Cup Finals last year. Maybe if they had Matthew Shane in that overtime, could have made a difference. So if they could win a cup, I mean, remember, I brought this up last week on the NHL on the Ice podcast. You know, the Nighthand is going back a ways, but the 94 Rangers, you know, they traded a couple of youngsters in Tony Amonte and Doug Wade, went on to have huge careers right before the trade deadline to win a cup. And, you know, again, you don't look, if you're a Ranger fan,
all
you don't
is
look
forgiven.
Back. Exactly. You don't look right. Back. Now, if they didn't win that cup, that would have been a nightmare scenario. So
The repercussions would have been, people would have been getting fired.
Yeah, but you got Messier's guarantee, so all was good.
Yeah, well, Rick to bail them out, but anyway.
Oh, the Islanders!
But remember,
he comes out.
Always, always in Chris.
Always.
But remember,
yes,
they have two big restricted free agents that need to be signed next year, and that's Cody Ceci and Mark Stone as well. So you know they have to invest money in those two restricted free agents, and Duchene becomes unrestricted. So I mean, he could walk anytime, and that's the main thing with Duchene. It's you know with some of these guys, they're RFAs. They still get to keep the rights so they can negotiate exclusively with them. But with Duchene, it's a huge risk because he becomes a UFA in 1920. And there's that chance, hey, if I don't get 7 million. 2019, 2020. Isn't that what I said?
Oh, okay. You said 1920, but I read that as the roaring
2019, 20. you know, he could just say, hey, look, if I don't get, you know, Bobby Ryan makes 7.25. If I don't get that much money, I'm walking. And that's a huge risk on Ottawa for them to take.
Now, Bobby Ryan, his deal's up this year, correct?
No, he's got
like four more years to go.
I thought he was
21-22.
Yeah,
oh, goodness, so that money's not
but
available.
You know what? If you're Matt Duchene, though, and after being through all this drama, before handing back to Mark there, Brian, on the Knights, your thoughts on the Knights. But, you know, you've been through all this drama the last year and a half. If you go through the season and you wind up being really happy in Ottawa And if Ottawa is willing to give you a max deal, an 8-year deal, which no other team can do, and give you a full no-move clause so you don't have this drama anymore, and they're willing to pay you a really good rate, maybe a touch less, but an 8-year deal and that no-move clause, I could see him saying, you know what, I'm happy here. I got the 8-year deal. They can't trade me without my okay. I have that behind me. Let's get a deal done. I could see that happening.
Absolutely. It's very well possible that could happen. But, again, it's a Canadian team. You get paid less in Canada. A lot of UFAs stay clear away from signing with Canadian teams just because of the rate of money. So there's that there. And look, he can walk away and just say, look, I can go wherever I want. I go highest bidder. Even though they can give me the max of 8 years and max money, I could probably get a lot of money somewhere else and still make the same amount because of the difference of money between Canadian money and American money. Right.
You're going to get somebody to overpay for him. I could see 7 years, $7 million if he has a good 2 years here. I could see him going as a $7 million player with the way the salaries are ramping up, with the McDavids and Eichels going 10s and 12s, and Kane and Taves at their 10.5, and Kopitar 10.5. Well, Duchesne would be in that, in my opinion, if he has a good couple of years, he's going to be in that next tier salary structure. I don't think that's really a stretch to where someone could
go to 7.5 even. Yeah, maybe
if he scores 25 and 30, he could go 7 years, $7.5 million. That's 56. So if Ottawa's budget is five and a half, and they can only offer one more year, that's not even close, right? I mean, I think it's a huge win.
Yeah, I got to
it's a win now move. It's a win now move.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think Nashville, as far as the win now scenario, got the better fit. I don't know. I still want to see how Duchesne fits into the 200-foot game that Ottawa plays. I know he brings speed, and I know he brings goals, but we've seen a lot of goal scorers. And I use the Kings as an example because they're a West Coast team, and I'm a Kings fan. We've seen a lot of guys in a defensive first structured 200-foot game. Really struggle as goal scorers and go other places into different systems and put 30, 35 goals up. Brian Boyle scored 30 goals once he left the Kings. Teddy Purcell was a 2-time 30-goal scorer once he left the Kings. So I wonder how going out of a more offensive-oriented scheme, if you will, in Colorado to a more defensive 200-foot game structure as they play in Ottawa, I wonder if that hurts his numbers any.
No, that's a good question, and I guess we're 2 games into his career with Ottawa,
right?
We'll see. When half the season's over, where he's at, stats wise, points wise, playing wise, I think Ottawa needs to make a long term decision short term. I mean, I think they only have a small window to examine of how he will fit in the system, if he's worth the money that he'll probably ask for.
For me personally, I'm glad the deal's over with, and hopefully this will be the last time that Chris wants to bring it up and talk about it. Oh my goodness, this thing just spiraled and spiraled and spiraled and circled, and thank goodness it's over with. And
it's been like a vampire.
it's just undead. It's a zombie event. Now, hopefully someone threw it in the fire, and we won't have to. All we can talk about now is how they're doing on the ice, and I'm looking forward to that. But Brian, I wanted to ask where you are as far as your home base.
Show wise or.
Yeah, where do you hang your hat?
We hang our hats on WBLZ Sports, the NHL on the Ice show. We record our show on Sunday evenings, and then it's replayed on WBLZ Sports on Monday night or Monday mornings, depends on the schedule. But we do our live show Sunday evenings on Blog Talk Radio. FanSpeak is our site where we do it off of on Blog Talk. So if you want to listen to us live, you can join in, or you can listen to the replay on WBLZ Sports.
Awesome, awesome. And one last thing before we got to let you go. I know the perspective here in Las Vegas about the Vegas Golden Knights. They're going to win the next 10 Stanley Cups if I listen to everybody here who actually has never covered hockey before. And a lot of sports writers here in town are like last night, and no offense to the Golden Knights, they're doing a great job in the community. But I'm listening to the game last night on the radio, and they're referring to Patrick Laine as Patrick Lane. So there's I wanted to tweet out, hey, it's not Lane. It's Line A, and I couldn't figure out how to enunciate that on Twitter. But be that as it may, what's your thoughts on the Golden Knights? And if you've seen them play, what do you think is sustainable outside of the Spinal Tap goalie curse that's hit them? And what do you think might pop the air in the balloon, if you will?
Well, I think you hit it. What pops the air in the balloon is the lack of depth in goaltending in the organization. But it's been a fun team to watch. I mean, to see this team compete night in, night out, steal games that they probably shouldn't steal, and they just battle every night. And it's been a fun team to watch. Right now, their goaltending is their Achilles heel, I believe. But you know what? If they can keep grinding it out till Marc-Andre Fleury comes back, they can survive this. And you know what? The way this team was built, and the way the NHL allowed them to build it, made them very competitive right away. And Chris and I talked about a couple of weeks ago, is that they didn't want a San Jose Sharks expansion team where they take 5-6 years to compete right away. You know, they didn't want Atlanta Thrashers or Senators or Lightning. You know, they didn't want this organization to struggle for the first 5 years, because that's when you lose your fan base. When you can get a team that can come in and compete right away, you grab that fan base, right? And you get them excited, just like, you know, it is right now. Because right now, I mean, this team's battling night in, night out. They're second in their division. They're fun to watch. They're competitive to watch. You know, at home they're 7-1. I mean, the only loss at home, I believe, is the Red Wings, right?
Yes, that's correct. That was the game Marc-Andre Fleury got hurt in, and they left a concussed Fleury in for 30 minutes, and he gave up 4 goals.
Oh,
so that's
butchered that. I was so mad that they left him in, or either he stayed in and they left him in, because we talked about that Sunday on the shows. You know, don't they have a concussion protocol? Why did he not get pulled?
He laid face down in his crease with his head in his hands right when it happened. Now, any spotter who's watching the game has to get him out at least for the 15 minutes in the quiet room.
Absolutely.
He's been out almost a month.
Right, and he played the rest of the game that you lost. And then you lose them for a month. And then it's been a complete domino effect. You know, Subban goes down, Dance goes down. You know, and it's been awful. Trust me, I've had these guys on my fantasy teams, you know, right? And it's pissing me off that they keep playing. Right? It's killing me.
No doubt. No doubt.
But, I mean, it's a fun, competitive team. It's, you know, and it's from top to bottom. Every player is contributing. It's not like one player is dominating
Absolutely.
The team or relying on one player. It's top to bottom competitive. And look, they got pieces that they can move. And that's, you know, if they end up on the cusp or out of the playoffs, they've got guys that they can move. You know, James Neal, I mean, he's 30 years old at $5 million. I mean, will you re-sign him long-term? You know, not a long-term deal. Maybe 3-year deal, if that, but I'm sure he'll want long-term. Same thing with David Perron. He's a UFA. So, I mean, you have pieces to move if you want. And that's the one thing that McPhee has done. I mean, he and he's added a lot of assets in the draft. 2019, he has stockpiled 7 picks in the first 3 rounds for 2019.
Absolutely.
He's got a stockpile, though, guys, draft picks for 2018. I think he only has 5 picks for this upcoming draft. So that's where he's got to trade some of these guys to stockpile those first 3 rounds. I don't think he has a second round pick this year. So he's got to work this year.
He will.
They don't have a 4th round pick next year. But, yeah, he will. I mean, he's got the pieces to move guys. I mean, your backlog on defense, right? So you move some of the pieces on defense, bring up some of the younger guys, you know, and get them playing and get them going. But I love the way this team has been built for the short term and possibly for the long term.
Absolutely. The game in Toronto on the road trip, I don't know if you saw, but I think that game and they're 7-1 at home, but they had a bad road trip with a minor league backup goalie in the pipes. They're still 3-4-1 on the road. They're pumping 47-48% of their road points into the bank right now early in this. That comes back later on. And once those points are in the bank, you know, you can't take them away from this. But the Toronto game, that was just, I mean, that's the type of game that I think the NHL wants the league to move towards. If anybody caught the Toronto game, Toronto jumped out to a lead early. They were up 3-1. Vegas, as they will do, fought their way back into it, tied it, and the overtime in that game was just phenomenal. One of the best games I've seen all year was that Golden Knights-Toronto game. Fast, skill on both sides. Vegas has more skill than we thought they were going to have. And their puck movers, Nate Schmidt, I want to shout Nate Schmidt out. That guy's phenomenal. The way he shows up at the rink night in and night out and competes. Colin Miller quarterbacking the blue line. Eventually that's going to shift over to Shea Theodore. Once, you know, he has a little bit more seasoning and a full-time spot opens up. They're still having to scratch guys in and out just to get Shea Theodore in the lineup, even though he is now on the NHL roster. Very, very interesting start to the season for this team. And like you said, Guy Boucher said that they were the hardest working team that he scouted in the NHL period. And it's not even close. These guys get sticks in every passing lane. They compete on every 50-50 puck, most times winning it. And all the effort plays that don't show up in the stat sheets, these guys show up and compete for every single night. And I think that's if you can put that into an 82 game schedule and at the end of the season you hang up your gear, and I think they and the community will be proud of where they finish up, regardless if they make the playoffs or not.
And you credit your head coach for that. Gerard Gallant has done a phenomenal
100%.
Job. Look what he did in Florida.
Coach of the year
and
right
he
now.
Got shafted.
Yep.
Yes, he got shafted in Florida, in my opinion.
Called him a cap.
Right?
Called him a cap.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he should have. 100%.
I remember talking with Chris about it on this show when that happened. And Chris might remember I was more than a little bit furious for a team that hadn't made the playoffs in, I think, 21 years to have a coach that comes in, increases your points by 36 points the first year, takes you to the playoffs the second year, and you get 11 games, I think, to start the next season, and they sack you, or maybe they were 10-11, and they call you a cab on the road and say, see you later. When they announced him as the coach, I was thinking Lindy Ruff might be the front runner, but they apparently had their eye on Gerard Gallant the whole time. Fantastic job. Jack Adams right now.
Yeah, if you had to give it in the first 2 months of the season, absolutely. And I really hope that they can keep this pace up, you know, being competitive night in, night out. And you look at the division, and look, it's not a great division. I mean, you got the Kings. Vancouver, I don't think they can last. Calgary's floating around. Anaheim struggling. I mean, injuries
they're
are killing them right now.
Oh,
right?
Yep.
And Sharks are – I mean, they're all right there, though. It's not like any team is out of it except – the Coyotes. Edmonton, what a big The Coyotes are terrible. But, I mean, Edmonton, you know, they just called up Puljujärvi today, and he's playing. He got his first goal of the season, and they needed a spark in Edmonton to get back on track. But, look, I mean, only 7 points separate second place and seventh place in this division. But I don't think some of these teams can sustain their success, like Vancouver. I think the Sharks have fallen off without Marleau. The Ducks are battling injuries. And the Knights can jump on that and take advantage of that and get a nice gap between them. You're going to see the Knights in the playoffs for for their first season. It's a good possibility. I look back at it and I examine it. I'm looking at it. I'm like, you know what? There's a lot of talent here that, you know what? If everything falls right, this team can battle for a playoff spot. And unfortunately, it's the goaltending that could be their – what was their strength could be their weakness.
Yeah, no, if Fleury comes back and Chris made a good point, they have two games in the next 10 days. They do the Edmonton-Vancouver trip, and then they have their five-day bye, their week bye. So look for Lagesse to play the two Canadian games, and then Fleury's been skating in practice since Tuesday, and coach had said once you see him on the ice, he's 4 to 5 days away. But I don't see why you would, you know, put him in for these two games when you know you have another week after that. And the farther you get from a concussion, obviously, the better off you are. So if and Lagesse last night made a couple of just fantastic saves to keep the game where it was when it was close before the Knights kind of pulled away from Winnipeg, who has been red hot. So if you can get through the next two, and then Fleury comes back and can stay healthy, I like their chances. I had them over under 70 points to start the season, and I think I'm pretty safe at 70. But even let's say Anaheim gets everybody back after Christmas and they go on a nice run like they did last year, and they bump up to number two. Calgary finds their game. They bump up to three. I still see Vegas in the Central isn't setting the world on fire right now either. So I could see Vegas battling for 7-8 in the wild card spots, even if they do fall back out of the top three in the Pacific pretty easily.
As long as their goaltending don't fail them, and as long as they keep, you know, they're in the middle of the pack of shots against, which is nice. I mean, you're not giving up a 37 shots a game like Florida is, but you're not giving up 28 shots like San Jose. And look at where San Jose is. But they're right in the middle of the pack of 31.8 shots a game that they're giving up. So, I mean, as long as they keep it below that area, shots per game, I think they're going to be fine. I mean, the defense is nice. I mean, they got some young guys. They got some veterans there. Like you said, Nate Schmidt's done a great job. Derek England, I mean, you got to love what England brings to the team. 100%. Stoner. I mean, veteran guys in there with a little mix of some of the younger guys. So, I mean, you got to like what they're bringing to the table. I mean, it's so bad that they had to send Jason Garrison down to the minors.
Right.
Loaded.
That's another
defense.
Piece that you might be able to move at the deadline for a good second, third round pick. And because you're still heavy on D, you're still, you know, the Reinhardts, the Garrisons, you're still heavy at that position. So, you know, if you could do a Neil Perron, hopefully re-sign Marchessault, and then get a couple of the defenses, even if you're moving them for that fifth round pick or fourth round pick, if you could get four deals done at the deadline, kind of solidify your roster the rest of the way and go into the offseason with a nice stash of picks for this upcoming draft, which looks to be shaping up into a pretty solid and deep draft, then kudos to the club. They've done a great job.
But I think their strength is on the defense and to move guys. Look, I would love to see, like, Neil sign, hey, look, I love it here. I want to sign a 2-3-year deal and stick around and be successful with this club, or even David Perron. I mean, they're putting
Perron
a nice
a lot
amount
the table.
Of. Yeah, they're
putting a lot out of David Perron that I didn't
that I didn't expect to see. He is a beast to get the puck from. When he's on the wall and in the corners, it's pretty much his puck. And everyone else is just living on that puck, but it's his puck. And he saves a lot of possession time in the offensive zone that protects that goaltender situation and keeps the teams from going the other way just by his tenacity on the puck. And I'm really liking what Perron brings to this team.
So if you can, instead of moving him right away, you know, hold on for a couple of years, see this team succeed, you know, have some players here that can help this organization grow and go from there. You know, hopefully you don't have to get rid of them right away, that they will want to stay and see this organization succeed.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, sir, thank you for spending so much of your time with us this Saturday morning. We're going to have to let you go. Make sure everybody follows NHL on the Ice on Twitter and tune in Sunday nights on Blog Rock Talk Radio to catch Brian and Chris for the NHL on the Ice podcast. Brian, thank you so much, sir, and we will definitely be talking to you down the road.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Thanks, Brian. Talk
all right. Tonight. All right, all right. Well, Chris, that's gonna bring us into our overtime segment breakdown. We pretty much got into it already, but give me what I hope to be the final thoughts on the Matt Duchene deal from the Chris Lisa perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ottawa got the best player in the deal, to say the least, and Matt Duchene. I think you'll ride it. Like I said, you ride it out. Yes. They're a deep organization in terms of young talent, so that allowed them to take a chance and take a little bit of a risk, and sometimes you have to do that. So we'll see what the future holds, but Matt Duchene's going to be there the next couple of years. So to me, he's a phenomenal – he's not a one, but if he's your second-line center, he's like a 1A. So, obviously Nashville, again, dealing from strength. If they did not have the current blue line core that they did, they probably don't trade a Sam Girard with his upside. He's probably on a regular on that team right now. But because they're deep on the blue line, they can trade a Girard, they can trade a second round pick and a prospect. And land a Kyle Torres, and now all of a sudden Nick Bonino is your third line center. For Colorado,
yeah,
I'm
how about
just,
that?
From Colorado's perspective, I've been tough on Sakic. I would give him there's a difficult situation, a lot of which he caused. But having said all that, I would give him a grade of an A- on this deal. Again, with prospects, you never know. I remember a few years ago, the Caps were going for it, and they landed Martin Erat from the Predators, and they gave up their first-round pick from the year before in Philip Forsberg. And no one really made a big to-do about it, that Forsberg was traded, and then all of a sudden Forsberg turned into the player that he has. So I think Girard's going to be really good. Will he be elite? Time will tell. I don't think the other two kids they got, I think, have a chance to be very good, especially Bowers. And, they have to do well with those draft picks. This is a good draft to have those draft picks. So I'm definitely a glass half full on this trade for Colorado. I would give him a grade of an A- to get, Andre, with respect to Mr. Hammond aside, to get six assets for Duchene, who was going to be a free agent after next season. That is a lot. And this is not an organization that has a deep prospect pipeline. So it served a need in more ways than one, this trade for Colorado. So, kudos to them. And who, you want to know something? They still need help on defense big picture. So maybe, maybe the kid they got from Nashville, he gets traded for, down the line a bit for a defenseman, or maybe Shane Bowers does. But they needed young talent. So, again, like Russ said, I could see this deal working out well for all three. But kudos to Sakic to getting, an extra team involved, to getting extra assets. It was a very shrewd move, to say the least.
Let me put it to you this way. If you take out Colorado and you're Nashville and Ottawa, and
or Nashville and Ottawa, and you trade Turris for Duchesne with picks and prospects going both ways, what do you think? Who wins that deal?
I think that's the interesting part to me. Yeah, I mean, I think Duchesne's the better player, but then it's fitting into systems like you brought up before. You know, Turris is, which, you know, he doesn't have to go in there and be the guy. See, in a way, it's a little bit harder for Duchesne. He's going to go in. There's been so much expectations on him. And also, too, a lot of it is, too, because Matt Duchesne was the third overall pick a number of years ago. And I think that's also made this trade complicated in terms of how people have evaluated him in terms of, oh, he was the third overall pick. Like, whereas if he was the 13th overall pick in that draft, maybe things would have gone smoother, if that makes any sense. But so there'll be a little bit more of a target, if you will, from that standpoint. Whereas Kyle Turris, especially since he just signed his contract too, doesn't even have to worry about that. So sometimes that could be a hindrance. Sometimes that could be a plus. He just goes in, fits in, plays his game, contributes, be the second line guy for Nashville. He doesn't have to be, he doesn't have to be the Charles in charge on that team or anything. He just has to fit in. So it will be a little bit easier from that perspective as well. But I like the deal from both of those teams' perspectives. They're both going forward. They both gave up quite a bit of futures, but they both are organizations that are deep. And when you have a deep organization in any sport, you can trade. It's a lot easier to trade out of the cupboard when there's 10, 12 pieces in it versus if you're a franchise where there's only a couple, and then you trade in that couple, and now there's nothing left in the cupboard. So both organizations, you look at it, Nashville gave up a lot of futures, but they kept their top two kids, and Dante Favreau, who was their first-round pick, also a defenseman a couple years ago, and the kid who slipped in the draft, Tuulainen, I believe, was lighting up the KHL for Nashville, was their first-round pick from this past year. And we mentioned before about Ottawa not having to give up Shabbat, Colin White, or Logan Brown, all elite kids.
Right, sure.
All elite kids. So, again, they gave up a lot of talent, but they still have a lot of talent left, and that's the kind of organization that you needed to find, too. So I really do think it worked. Now, the proof will be in the pudding, and ironically, right. Well, the thing is, from a Nashville and Ottawa perspective, I think we'll know over the next 2 years how this deal worked out for them. From a Colorado perspective,
sure,
it could take 5-6 years.
Could be 4 years.
Because,
yeah, at least 4.
Yeah, well, those 3 draft picks, Shane Bowers is probably a couple of years away from the NHL, at least 2 to 3 years away. He's playing college hockey. He's an 18-year-old kid. And the 3
yep.
draft picks this June, they're not picking them.
3 years out.
In June. 3 years
yeah.
out, yeah. So it could be 5-6 years to evaluate from a Colorado end. But I think they did, on paper, in terms of the value of the assets, they got to be happy.
Yep. And I think the biggest point is, does Ottawa re-sign him after next season, but hopefully before after next season? Because if not, that's doom for a front office. That's you're going down the Dean Lombardi road right there. That's,
yeah, I mean,
know.
Like I said, I think they're playing. I don't think they would have done. I think that's their plan. Now, at the same token, you're going to want to wait and see. Let this breathe a little bit. And, hopefully, let just Matt go out, play hockey, play well like we know you can. And hopefully for them, they have a big year. And he's, like I said, he's happy here. And if I was him, the last thing I would want, the first thing I would want is some kind of certainty about my future where it's been so up and down. So he wants to be happy here. He could be very open to sign an extension this coming summer. And he's a Canadian kid, too. So. I don't think if Ottawa was going to be anywhere near the ballpark of what it would take to sign him, that they would make this trade. I really don't. That doesn't seem to make sense. Now, that's not a guarantee that at the end of the day they're going to be able to re-sign him. But if they're like, the most we can do is
5, 5.5. You know, well, we know that's not going to get it done. I don't foresee that. But you know, maybe they feel like, hey, we have a 2-year window with this trade with him, and while we're giving up really good pieces, we didn't give up our cream of the crop. Let's go for it and see what happens. You know, there, like I said, there are a lot of franchises in all of sports who have done that in the past. Sometimes it's worked and wonderfully, and sometimes it's worked terribly. So, but we'll have to, like I said, we'll have to wait and see on that.
Well, all righty, Chris, that's going to wrap it up for this week. Tell them where to find us and let us know what's on tap.
Yeah, so again, on Twitter, we're at the Vegas Hockey Pod. You can find us on the Sportsology SoundCloud page. Just search under Sportsology or Russ Cohen under SoundCloud.com. We're on the Grandstand Sports Network, so that's GrandstandSportsNetwork.com. You can find our show at TheHockeyWriters.com. You can find us on Blog Talk Radio. Just search Vegas Hockey Podcast. And you can also find us on iTunes as well. Next week, we have another great guest. We have a returning guest, Mr. Justin Bradford, author of Welcome to Smashville. Where the Predators are at, there's kind of been more up and down, but, you know, they have a decent record, but probably not up to their standards and what they hope to accomplish this year. So we're going to be checking in with him next week, talking some Preds.
All right, buddy. Another good job, another great show in the books. We'll be talking to everybody next week. For Chris, I'm Mark, and we're gone.